Hello and welcome to another exciting episode. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't do this anymore. I'll be in my trailer.
Well, we've
lost
Ashley's
cue.
We've lost.
I think
him.
That's Ashley.
Hey, everybody. That's, I guess, my cue. I'm Ashley Florence. It's nice to meet you all. I guess I will be taking over Attack of Opportunity today, where we're going to be talking to Phil. Hopefully, Jeff comes back. We haven't hurt his feelings. We love Jeff. Right?
We do love Jeff. Yes.
Let us know if you love Jeff.
We're of course.
Sure you do. Excellent. So, Phil is, a person of interest for us because, he DMs in public. Like, it's kind of crazy.
Ooh.
Like, I don't do this in public. I don't let people know I play. Yeah, I do. I'm so proud to be a dice roller. But Phil goes out and does it so everyone else can see what he's doing. So welcome, Phil. It's really good to see you.
It's a pleasure to be here. Ashley, thank you very much.
Very well. Oh, did we lose Jeff forever? So tell me about yourself. Like, what got you started here, Phil? Like, let's take it back. Let's get to know you, the young you. But when did you know you were the nerd that you are today? And I say that with love because...
So I read the unabridged Moby Dick in second grade. And I was actually really interested in all of the parts that were about essentially 1800s whaling practices. But the book was kind of dry for my taste. The one criticism I gave it when my mother, what did you think? Was like, it could use more action. So by the time I was in third grade, because that was on the summer break between second and third grade, she went out and got me some just random fantasy novels from a discount bookstore. And she brought back my first fantasy novel ever, which was Kaz, the Dragonlance series. And I read that, and it had a very sword and sorcery kind of vibe to it, and I was hooked. And then I moved on to Red Sonja and a bunch of other books that she picked up for me, and that was when I was in third grade. So that's when it started. It started with a criticism of Moby Dick when I was reading it for a book report.
Now, let's make sure that all the literary people aren't, upset about us. Like, I'm sure you love Moby Dick. But you just
absolutely. It was, I mean, it was a fantastic book. I loved Queequeg and Shmee. and of course there's vital lessons to learn from it about 1800s whaling practices. like I said, it got to be a slog, especially for a second grader reading the unabridged version because it was 1800 pages.
Yeah, that takes
some
dedication.
It was massive. Yeah. It took my entire summer, just reading it every night.
Well, that is amazing. And I think I would like to shake your mom's hand for being so amazing to just go out and get you all those fantasy books.
She was amazing. She is amazing. And one of the things that she did early on for me was she got me into a reading program as a child called Hooked on Phonics. And I picked that up very early on and started running with it. And it put me ahead of the curve for reading and reading comprehension for the rest of my life. I mean, when I graduated high school, I was one of the only people there that had a college level reading comprehension level. Whereas most of my classmates who were graduating high school were still reading at a deficient level. Because I grew up in an area with a pretty piss poor education system, unfortunately. So a lot of the slack had to be picked up by my mom and myself and, our friends and family that really came together to learn and grow as a person.
That's awesome. And don't forget, Mother's Day's coming up. So you get your mom something nice, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Oh,
I think Jeff's back.
Jeff?
Or someone.
He just doesn't get it.
He killed video. He doesn't want to be seen right now. He's being a drama queen.
That's fine. Well, he's in his trailer, everybody. He's in his trailer.
He is.
You're allowed to have your moment in your trailer. I mean,
of course.
We could safely say, Phil, that like your mom was the person that really helped shape you into the nerd you are today. And I think that is pretty amazing. And not many people have that sort of take on what turns them into the nerd they are today.
And it's strange, too, because... my mother is not a terribly nerdy person. She likes Star Trek and Star Wars, but she's not super into them. She was a very outdoorsy kind of woman. She ran a horse farm. She did a lot of outdoor kind of work most of her life. And I think the big important thing though was that she was supportive of my interests, even if they weren't always her interests. She didn't project her interests onto me to do other things. So it was nice.
That is amazing. So when did you start, you know, DMing games then? What brought you into the world of Pathfinder and dice rolling? Like, what was the leap from reading these amazing books and, you know, garnering all that knowledge into using it in a more practical way?
Well, if you can call role-playing games practical.
Absolutely.
So when I was early in my teen years, I was into LARPing a bit. And I was hooked up. Originally, I was going to medieval fairs. I went to the Hogtown Medieval Fair in Gainesville, Florida. And I loved it every year. It was fantastic going. And I always had an interest in fantasy. I'd been playing video games for quite a while at this point. And that's when I got with the SCA and another group at the time, which was doing, it was kind of a boffer SCA called Amtgard. And they were like the SCA, but way more affordable and closer to my house. So, yeah. So I was going to Amtgard meetups with these guys and doing boffer fighting. And I was 13 at the time. And a guy there started talking to me about Dungeons and Dragons. And when I was like, well, what's that? And he's like, well, it's a role-playing game. And I'm like, you mean like Final Fantasy? And he's like, yeah, kind of, except you don't use a computer.
Final Fantasy. I love it. I feel like that's just about everybody's like kind of introduction into it. It's like a game we play on a console or a...
I did my actual first RPG ever was Mario RPG.
Amazing.
Is a classic.
Totally.
But Final Fantasy VII was my obsession in my early teen years.
Yeah.
And it kept me occupied for quite some time. But this fella that I met at the Amtgard Games, who introduced himself only as Silver, we had no dice, but we did like a little impromptu role play. I took up the role of one of his characters and infiltrated a magical city under a lake.
Wow!
And met a sea dragon there. It was cool. I enjoyed it a lot.
Sounds amazing.
So after that, I immediately wanted to get into it. So I started hunting these books at used bookstore wherever I could find them, and this was in 1998, 1999. So this is when TSR had officially gone belly up and was about to be bought out by Wizards of the Coast. So most products were no longer being printed, and they were kind of finding their way into pawn shops and used bookstores. And I started playing Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition in 1999. It very quickly became clear that I was the only one that was willing to read the book to learn the rules.
The curse of the DM.
Exactly. So since they all thought I was an insufferable rules lawyer at the time, which I was 14, 13. They said, all right, fine, you DM then. And it just stuck.
That is amazing.
It just got stuck that way.
I love that whole transition, LARPing to someone, coming to you and saying that this might be something you're into in an impromptu mm-hmm. game, and you searching like for treasure for these books that were going out of print that weren't being reprinted, and leading you all the way through to becoming the DM you are today, which I just think is amazing. That itself is such a grand adventure. And
you want to talk about a grand adventure and a quest for treasure. Do you know how many years it took me to Psionic?
Let's try that again. Sorry, I think we broke up.
I was looking for one of the books that I spent a long time searching for was the Complete Book of Psionics, the Guide to Psionics from Second Edition. And it was super rare because it was one of the last ones to really get printed. And it was just one of the ones that never showed up where I needed it to. And it didn't show up after I decided to start playing 3.5.
course.
I looked for it for the entire 4-year run of 3.0 because we didn't play 3.0. We skipped the second edition all the way until 2005 when we decided to switch over to 3.5. And it wasn't until after I started buying 3.5 books with money that I was earning with my summer jobs I finally found it at a used bookstore in Gainesville and brought it home. And at that point, it was really more of just a trophy for looks because I wasn't going to end up using it much because we had moved on to a new edition. But it was still satisfying just to get it.
Absolutely. I feel like it would have been one of those moments where you like kick open the chest and music plays as you hold it above your head.
Yeah. Even if it was somewhat of a Pyrrhic victory to get it.
True. So, you know, is it through digging through all these stores and going to different game stores that got you into, you know, that sort of area, that arena of gaming in public and DMing more specifically in public?
Yeah. I did spend a lot of time in those places talking to people about it and looking for these things. And you know, I was kind of a shameless kid. At the time, I didn't realize early on that the hobby at the time was something that a lot of people had a real negative connotation tied to it. So I was fearless about just going up and asking. I would go up and ask the clerks. I would go up and ask other people that I saw hanging out at the stores. And sometimes I just got a lot of confused looks, and sometimes I got weird raised eyebrows, and other times I got people that got super excited to talk to me about it. Wow. And it was those people, the ones that got super excited, that really nurtured my interest in the hobby, you know? And those are the people I'm always looking for whenever I'm gaming, or whenever I set up a game in public, is I want those people that are really excited. They really want to be there. They really want to play this game with me. Because those are the best ones. Those are the best kind of people, and they end up becoming the best kinds of friends, I feel like.
Absolutely. There's a crazy level of dedication there, right? And it's not just for the game. You really do get to know the person as their character, who is an extension of themselves. So I agree. Absolutely. They are the best kind of friend.
But yeah, so I moved around a lot after high school. I went down to Tampa to go to college. And I had been playing for years at home with my brother and a handful of our friends. But when I went to college, in a large city, as opposed to out in the little quiet town that I grew up in Stark, with, you know, where it was a 30 or 45 minute drive away. I had to go all the way down to Gainesville to find such a store. But once I moved to Tampa, you know, which is a major city, and I had all of these people, and I was in an art school of these creative people that were just itching for this kind of experience. That is when it really started to take off, and that was when I realized I could reach a bigger audience than just my handful of friends that come over to my house to play, by playing in a place where more people can see me. In high school, I had bad experiences with playing where people could see me. If I played at high school in the library, I actually once had the librarian attempt to confiscate my dice because he thought we were gambling. And I was like, what would lead you to think that? He says, well, there's money on the table. And I'm like, that's a coin with no value in America. It was a British pence that I brought back from a student ambassador trip that I took in 2001. And so it's not legal currency in America.
Yeah.
And it was a souvenir that I use as my coin flip dice, you know. Ah. And there was quote unquote money on the table. He wanted to collect my dice and take them from me. And I didn't let him. So what should have been a very mild incident into like a 3-day suspension.
oh dear.
Yeah, I was pretty serious about don't touch my dice at the time.
Well, you never touch someone else's dice.
Right. I'm going to hand them over to a school official that I expect will likely lose them.
Exactly.
Anyway.
So fast forward back to, you said when you were going to college and you decided that you could reach more people on a more public forum and, you know, you overcame the, you know, this experience you had in high school and decided to go forward with it anyway. So what was your first time doing this like?
Well, I started networking with new students whenever we had a new quarter start at the school and new students were introduced in student housing. They had a little pizza party for everybody to get everyone together and get everybody to know each other in a certain extent. And I would just kind of, you know, work my way around the party and, you know, creep up and be like, you know, hey, kid, you ever played Dungeons and Dragons? Like I was trying to sell drugs to them. And most of them were like, ew, no, get away from me. But then there were a lot of them that were like, I'm interested in that. And one of them ended up being probably my best friend ever. His name's Steven. I met him in 2004 at a had a student housing pizza party. And he became one of my most enthusiastic players and my protege as a dungeon master. And now I would say, I would even go so far as to say he's surpassed me in a lot of ways because he is just a fantastic guy. He's actually a manager now at one of the stores that I play at regularly. So,
well, isn't that full circle?
Yeah.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. But as far as actually like sitting down and playing in front of other people, I started doing that after moving. I kept my game in college pretty open, but it was all at my place. You know, but most of the time it was at my place. But I was always inviting new people. Steven actually has some frustrating stories about how he had an entire campaign where he was the only constant character. Everyone else was a rotating cast. They went through 14 other characters in 3 chapters.
That is intense.
It's crazy. So it kind of turned into the where, you know, his character was the main character. He was the hero. And everyone else was just support characters that kept rolling in and dropping off for various reasons. But when I moved back to Jacksonville, though, and I had my own place, I had my own income. At the time, Steven was living with me because when he graduated, he was also in a similar position as I was. It was either move back out to the middle of nowhere with no job opportunities or find something you can make work. And I had an opportunity, which was my mother owns a home in Jacksonville. And it's upside down on its mortgage right now. So she said, well, why don't you just move in there with your fiance and you guys can keep the house from getting taken back by the bank and I won't charge you any extra. So I moved in there with myself and Steven and my now wife, Samantha, and we made it work, you know. But here in Jacksonville, we also found time to go out and find what kind of community we had moved into. And we found a lot of great local stores that have just been fantastic for us over the years. There was Hammer Hall at first, which was my favorite place ever. Unfortunately, they've closed their doors and moved on, but while we had them, that was the place where I went and did all of my out in public DMing, and that's where I got exposed to Pathfinder Society and where I got all of my experience playing with, well, I'm not going to say all my experience playing with strangers because I did a lot of it in college, but you know, for these games where it's like, you know, okay, I'm setting a time for 5 o'clock and whoever's at the table when you start is who's in the party. You know, that's where that started, you know, and it was really good. It was really bad sometimes, too, but it was really good overall.
I think that's amazing. It boggles my mind to just go out and, you know, just sit down at a table and say, like, we started 5 folks and whoever's here is in the party. I think that's absolutely amazing and wonderful people.
You get to meet a lot of jerks too.
Well, yeah. I'm focusing on the positive. Yeah.
I know. you know, and honestly, yeah, the good experiences outweigh the bad by far, you know. And there's always going to be those guys or girls that, you know, show up and decide to be a problem. But I'm actually grateful for them in a way because those experiences made me not just a better dungeon master, but a kinder and more tolerant person, I feel like, because once you learn how to put up with those kind of people, they stop affecting you, and you start seeing more of the issues that are underneath, the underlying issues. And it kind of makes you more understanding of people, you know, as you examine these people a little bit more closely, not just through the lens of how they act, but also through the lens of how they role play. Because it, you know, a lot of people don't realize how much of a window that is into your psyche. But when you start, I mean, when you remember that, you know, psychiatrists and psychologists have been using role play as a psychological tool for ages, even before it started being used for games, then it makes sense that, you know, you would learn something about people when they role play these wild, outlandish things, you know. And it's an interesting thing to learn about from people, you know.
Absolutely. And you made a really great point there about how role play was used originally mm-hmm. to learn about people. Now, you know, it's definitely a recreational tool. I think that's amazing. So you continue to, you know, Dungeon Master DM at home.
Yes, and, ma'am.
How many games do you have that happen around your table?
Oh, geez. So at home right now, currently I am running two of my own home games with my family and friends. One of them is actually, you remember that game that I said Steven had 16 other characters rotate in through? Yeah, that game's still going.
Oh my god.
Right now it's just Steven and Lane and Ashley. The other Ashley.
Not
you've
me.
You've met her. Yeah.
yes, I've met the other Ashley.
Yes. It's just those three. And that one has been going on for a long time. Ashley and Lane only just recently joined. But they're enjoying it quite thoroughly because it's a very high-powered, high-level game. And they get to do some really absurd things in it. Lane actually had a character. He's a frenzied berserker. This is 3.5 stuff. And he can't die as long as he's raging. He can't die from regular old hit point damage. So he'll do just the most outlandish, ridiculous things and get himself into untold amounts of trouble and just soak it all if it's hit point damage and just pray nobody's smart enough to use a spell on him that'll cause him to end his rage because it's the only thing that'll stop it. And then, of course, he'll just keep raging and hope that somebody's able to heal him back up to positive hit points before he runs out of time. And he loves that because... he loves that seat of his pants kind of feeling, you know, when it's like, you know, scraping by the, you know, the skin of your teeth. And we helped put together a really interesting character for Ashley, who is, she's a Valkyrie that was brought in by Lane's character because he died once and went into Valhalla. And he won the right to go back to the mortal world by winning a fighting tournament in Valhalla. And the Valkyrie that he ended up summoning later for help, the only reason he knew her name is because she was the officiator of that tournament. And so now Ashley, when she decided she wanted to join, we were like, we need to get her a character who's high level and who is appropriate to the game that would fit in and have a reason to just pop in like that. And that's what we put together for her, and she loves it. So, and then the other game I'm running is actually a Rise of the Rune Lords Anniversary Edition. With Lane, Steven, Ashley, and my wife Samantha when she's available. And that's probably my favorite game ever because not only do Steven and Lane have a great rivalry between their characters and some fantastic roleplay moments, but I mean, and I shouldn't say just Steven and Lane because honestly, Ashley and Samantha both bring a lot to the table. Samantha's character is hilarious. She's playing a halfling outrider who rides a giant schnauzer, and he's this little halfling man with a curled mustache, and his dog has a curled mustache too, and he rides around telling bawdy stories and these long yarns that everyone wants to, you know, cry BS at, but then he goes on these absurd adventures with them, and then they can't tell, you know, like how much of it is true and how much of it is BS because he's done horrible things right in front of their eyes that, you know, they all end up having to go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
But they all have a lot of great fun with it. And those are the games that I'm running at home. In public right now, I also have four. Oh Lord, thinking about it now, I have four games that I run. I play in one. I have three games that I run and one that I play in on Fridays, and they're a lot of fun. Those are my games that I play at VGR. That's our local game store, and a lot of great players that come in there. I get new inquiries every week, and it's good time. We have a lot of fun there.
That's so amazing to hear. And so now you're going to dabble in the world of podcasting. And what got you into this?
I've had a lot of people tell me that I've got the face for radio.
Heard the same thing.
I actually had a lot of people tell me that they enjoy listening to me talk about things. And these aren't just my friends that show up every week for the past 10 years to listen to me talk about dragons and monsters and, rescuing princesses and, killing orcs. But I get coworkers that tell me, when we talk about things at work, they're like, do you have a YouTube channel or something? And I'm like, no, should I? And they're like, you should, because you got some cool ideas, Phil. And I'm like, huh. So it's something that's been kind of rolling around in the back of my mind for a long time. And I've been interested in getting into podcasting for a long time. And it was actually through one of my players who was a fan of Rollmongers Network and the pods that Jeff's doing, Ashley, other Ashley. And she got connected with Jeff. And then through her, I got to talking with Jeff. And I'm hoping that, I'll be able to see you guys more on the weekends sometime soon.
Absolutely. I think that would be amazing to see. I have to say, I also am enthralled with how much you love the game and how you like.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. And I'm just thinking, is there anything that you want to plug? Is the thing? Do you sell merchandise? Are you planning on it?
Well, I don't have much of a product to sell of my own, but I will say to anybody who's listening that's in the Jacksonville, Florida region. Two great game stores to go check out. We've got FLGS, that's Friendly Local Game Store, and they are right off of Roosevelt and Timaquana.
That's awesome.
Game Store. And I want to talk about Video Game Rescue, which is a classic video game arcade, buy, sell, and trade shop and arcade. They've got a really cool setup there. They've got a little open space in the back where I do my games every week. And I got a great crowd that shows up there. And that's, of course, also where my buddy Steven is working. And it's a fantastic community, a lot of great people. Definitely go out and check it out. And if you're not in my area and those aren't stores that you expect yourselves to find yourself near, then I want to encourage everybody out there to get out there, go and find your local game stores, find your tribe, find your people, and, go be a part of something with them. And of course, show support for your local game stores because they need you. And, going there and playing a game, even with random strangers, could end up changing your life for the best because you could meet your new best friend there.
Thank you very much, Phil. That's all we have for today. And I just, again, thank you so much for coming and joining us and letting us get to know you a little bit more. It has been an absolute pleasure for me. And I know everyone listening is just absolutely learning about you more. Everyone out there, check out rollmongers.com. You can find all of our podcasts for you to listen to. Comment, get on our Twitter feed, check us out on Instagram, and don't be afraid to comment. We aren't scary. We want to hear from you, and we love each and every one of you. Bye for now. And don't forget to, share your love for Jeff, because whether he's here or not, he is the man that we all love. Thank you very much.
And we love you, Jeff.
Bye for now, everyone.
Thank you very much, Ashley.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.